kpi.org.
You are listening to KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming on the live on the web at kfai.org. Welcome to Ride On Radio. Our guest tonight is the Mary Lucia and their newly released book, What Doesn't Kill Me Makes Me Weirder and Harder to Relate To. From the good, bad, and weird of growing up from her eccentric family to drugs, death, and dogs, Lucia finally shares her life on her own terms in her book. Applying her signature dark humor to her own traumatic experience, Lucia's memoir is idiocentric, bold, and ironically relatable. Then, at the next half hour of the show, we will go into the Ride On Radio archives. Stay tuned for Ride On Radio. And welcome, Lucia. Thank you so much for having here on the station.
Thank you, Emma.
All right. So I'm just going to make a slight content warning because the book does deal with stalking issues, very traumatic, almost gendered-based violence. So I just want to give a pre-content warning for our listeners at home that this is just going to be the nature of the discussion. But I am going to try to start it off as kind of nice. And Mary, can you tell us how you got into radio?
It's interesting that I was going to school in New York. I was going to NYU studying theater and acting, and just somehow I got word. Somebody said, hey, this very cool DJ from a club DJ from First Avenue is going to be launching this new music station in Minneapolis. And I just kind of thought, well, I had no experience, but I just thought, all right, well, I'll give it a whirl. And so I ended up talking. It was Kevin Cole. And he hired me, and I left New York, went to Minneapolis, and worked at the station Rev 105, Revolution Radio. It was kind of a, it was really one of the first kind of, I guess I hate this word, but alternative radio stations. I don't know what that means anymore, but, so yeah. And then, you know, from there, I've just kind of bounced my way around the dial, for the last 28 years.
How did you end up at NPR? Because from my understanding, Rev was a victim, unfortunately, of the Broadcasting Act of like 1996, if I'm remembering right off the top of my head.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of things going on at that time because we ended up, Rev 105 was a commercial station, but it was independently owned, but it was eventually bought by ABC Disney, who had also owned other stations. So eventually, yeah, there was a conglomeracy with all of those stations that were either owned by three companies. So NPR, yeah, that was my first foray into public radio. And I heard about heard about the station launching back in whatever it was, 2004. And yeah, just I kind of knew some of the people involved. And we started that station literally from scratch. We were bringing in our own CDs to fill the music library. So, of course, we all had like the same Johnny Cash CD, you know, but it was just trying to build a station from the ground up. So it was really exciting to be a part of that one. In that first 5 years, it was truly an experiment.
That's really fascinating to hear because now NPR, The Current, have kind of, especially since you left the station, it like definitely has like a more public, kind of more sanitized approach. Mm-hmm. And I did want to kind of talk about The Stalker now, where it's because my first impression when I first read this was I'm still stuck on the raw meat being sent to the workplace, and not only that reaction, but your workers, your managers' reactions to that. Could you go more in detail?
Yeah, I got to sort of give this. I think that throughout my entire radio broadcast career, I've always had unwanted attention. Put mm-hmm. it that way. It's yeah. just been varying degrees, and also just with time, I think you become you define your boundaries a little bit more. So by the time this unwanted person was hassling me, you know, I'd been through it a few times and kind of knew certain channels, but it had never gone to this extreme. And one morning I was at work and, you know, we had in our kitchen, there was all the individual mail slots. And somebody said to me, hey, Luch, you want to go check your mail? There's something that needs your attention. And I thought, what? And they said, it smells. And I thought, well, it's not flowers, just by the sound of their voice. So walking in there and then just seeing this white butcher paper and realizing the contents was like 10 pounds of ground meat. It was terrifying, and it was, you know, it was surreal because some of my coworkers were asking me, who's it from? Like, that would be a normal thing in your box. And I'm like, I don't know who this is from. And so, you know, then being just sort of like humiliated and walking down to we had a lawyer there and an HR department, and then just saying, I mean, this was left for me. I have no idea. There was no name. And that was sort of the beginning of that stalking period, because I did not know who this person was. There was never a name. There was never anything. It was either an email or it was these random packages with nothing to indicate where this person lived or who they were.
That's insane. Is like just like the lack of like emotional, like when you talk to like the lawyers and your coworkers, it's like the lack of emotional, like, I'm sorry this happened to you. Because when I had a horrible issue at my old job where I was doing field season work, I'm out on a drill site in the middle of like nowhere Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I had a farmer come up to me every single week getting very mad at me, and I'm by myself. Mm-hmm. And I emailed my boss, who was headquartered here in the cities, and they're like, well, you have to be professional, blah, 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 and be nice. And I'm like, I'm dealing with a very unhinged man who probably has a gun in his car.
Right.
And I'm very scared. I am terrified. So
I think what that speaks to is that, you know, it isn't just people in media. Yep. You know, anyone is certainly open for something like this. But I also think, too, that the sort of parasocial relationships that form when you're on air every day, or you're on TV every day, or you're writing something in the paper, when you're putting yourself out there, it is your voice, and people get to know you. And if there is a mental instability, they can take that, I know her from the radio, to far places of, you know, delusion. It was real delusion. And I think that the company, you know, certainly I can't be the only one that this has ever happened to in the history of the station, but I believe that the sort of business as usual, hush hush, just keep this to yourself, it didn't help me. It just isolated me a lot more.
That's like the one thing I got from this book, was like the level of isolation that you felt. And I do genuinely reciprocate, or I do generally understand where that isolation was coming from, especially when it comes to like your boss is saying like, oh, that's just a bummer about the stock. And I'm like, I would have snapped. I actually had to put down the book a few times. I'm like, oh, I relate to that a little too much.
So did I. Yeah. Emma. I mean, you know, for me, it was hard, because at first I felt like I cut people a ton of slack, because I thought, well, I don't expect you to understand fully what this is like if you've never been in this position. But as things wore on and this went on and on, I kept thinking, if I even just had gotten a little bit of consideration, or somebody even asking me that was in a management level, how is this affecting you? And are you able to do your job the same way? But there wasn't any of that. And I really felt that had there been, that would have gone a really long way for me, you know? Yeah.
I also wanted to ask, because like I, again, like because of the subject matter of the book, it was a little difficult for me. How was it writing it for you? Was it any way cathartic? Was it any way like, this is a part of the healing process?
I would love to think that. However, if I'm being completely honest, which I am, that remains to be seen. I think there was a certain amount of, I'm going to get this done, and I'm going to write about this book, because this experience in a book, because I guess writing is creative power for me, and it always has been. And I kind of had this mentality that if I don't get this down in a creative format, this will have been for nothing, because I was making changes. I don't know if you had the same experience, but I felt like a stranger was imposing things on me that forced me to change who I was. And I'm not adverse to change. Change is fine. But the kinds of changes that I had to make on a daily, it was so out of my control. And that was where I thought, well, I can gain just a tiny bit of that power back in writing and being creative.
It's like the loss of power and the loss of control. And for me, like I didn't do any social media posts for a long time. I didn't want anybody to geolocate me. My business card only had my office phone that I really never answered, because I stopped picking it up.
Emma, I hear you.
And I remember this one guy picked up the office phone, and it was this person trying to sell me a phallic-shaped
in object and just would not, I could not get them off the phone because I was a public media. And the worst thing was, is I actually got a lot of attention through my workplace because I thought this was a cute idea to have a picture of me and my dog. And the dog, people wanted to cling onto the dog, and which was like fun because I had high school students ask me like sciencey questions. That was really fun. Mm-hmm. But I had to stop at some point because I'm like, my poodle is causing me harassment.
That is a real concern because it's just about, again, in any real job, it's like how much of yourself do you share and how much will you reveal? And speaking of dogs, I mean, that's a big thing for me. I mean, I talked about my dogs a lot and, in fact, shared with my listeners of, you know, 13, 14 years at that time about how one of my pugs, Smudge, was sick. And it was sort of the journey of us trying to rehabilitate her after a surgery. And just I kind of updated listeners on it on a regular. And I also did do social media posts at that time. And so when I knew that Smudge and I were going to part ways, you know, I sort of shared that incredibly vulnerable part. I've even wrote about it. I don't know what it must sound like if you're driving in your car listening to the radio and you hear someone crying on air. You know, that was me. And that was the actual way in for this person, because I received an awful lot of people saying, oh, I'm right there with you with your dogs and cats, and I'm in that difficult position of end-of-life decisions. And so it was really not uncommon for me to respond to anybody, a stranger, and just say, I'm really sorry that you're going through that, because I do know what that feels like. And, of course, little did I know that I was responding to somebody who would make my life absolutely miserable.
Because it all did, because I remember in the book that was like the process of Smudge. I also had a pug growing up named Zelda. That's why I love about the photo so much. Can you talk about the cover art?
Of course I can. Yeah. Well, I got to say that cover was in my brain way before I even finished the book, because for a couple of reasons. Well, obviously, I own a pug mask that goes over my head. And just the fact that, you know, I guess you could be a little more interpretive and say, you know, as a voice on radio, you know, you're almost masked and people aren't really totally aware of who you are in a crowd. And this book is truly sort of a reveal and a taking off of one's mask. But it to me also, it's a bit irreverent. And that is my humor. And that is also within the book because I really was aware that I could write about the story of the stalker, and that was certainly one major part of my life, but it was important to give a reader an idea of who I was. If they, like you, you didn't listen to me growing up, that's cool. So a lot of people are not going to know who I am. And so I thought to supplement the other chapters with just some rando stories, because I have had kind of an interesting life and I have interesting people around me. But I love that book. Everything about that cover is chef's kiss. And, you know, I guess I've heard from other people, they say, you know, first-time memoirists don't usually get what they want in terms of the title or the design, and this was, like, knocked it out of the park.
When you mentioned, like, for the title as well, can you elaborate more on that? Our front office volunteer, Sadie, really loves the title of your book, by the way.
I guess it speaks to people, which is something that was important to me, because this is exactly how I felt. It was something that was nearly killing me, and somehow it was making me feel weirder, and I felt harder to relate to. And yet, as I've been telling these stories and talking to people, even just since the book was released, I mean, there are people saying, no, I can't, like you did, I can relate to this, which is, you know, amazing to me, because I never really set out like, I'm going to write this book, this is going to really help anyone who was in this situation. I just thought, this is my story, and I have a pretty dark sense of humor, and I thought, I will just tell the story in this way. And obviously, it should raise some awareness, I hope, about what is being misunderstood about. It's a crime. It's a felony crime. People do not know. In my case, it was really difficult to get response from law enforcement because they were unfamiliar with stalking, where it's a person you do not know, you have never met. They're only familiar with cases of, you know, an ex or some relationship. So that was that was really difficult to get them to take that seriously, that, no, I don't know this person, but I know it's the same person. And then just actually treating it as a felony crime, but you have to throw in the mental illness component, which, of course, is the juggernaut of all things. You cannot mandate mental health. You cannot court order unless somebody has physically harmed you. And when you have been emotionally and physically stalked by somebody for near to 3 years of your life, and they've shown up in your yard, at your work, at your house, everywhere, threatening you, a judge doesn't see what damage has been done, because I'm standing there and the scars are internal and the damage and the pain is inside, and they can really only assess the crime by saying, well, you know, did he hurt you in any way? And it's like, yes.
Yeah.
Do I have scars to prove it? Probably not, but they're in there.
Yeah. The other one that was like always, one of the stalking incidences that blew my mind was actually for the state fair incidents. And could you just kind of elaborate
yeah.
or like explain more of that? Because that one blew my mind.
Yeah, state fair is like a freak show. I mean, that is kind of known. Yeah. And I've had to broadcast from the state yeah. fair as long as I've been in radio. So we're talking, you know, 17 consecutive summers I've been out in that fishbowl. And it's not my favorite place to be. I'll just say that right now. No offense to the fair. But at that particular time when I was so hyper aware of this person that was sort of tracking my every move, I was doing my show out there as I did every day. And this woman came up and she had written on the palm of her hand in Sharpie, softball camp. And she's waving it in my face in the window. And I'm like, thanks for listening. I have no idea what you're talking about. And it later turned out this was a woman. I wasn't on Twitter at that time because I had dropped out of social media too. And there was this person that they were tracking. Our digital team was tracking, who had been making these sort of veiled threats that she was coming to the fair to see me and X, Y, and Z. And we sort of put it all together and realized this was the woman that was making these threats. And we got her photograph and we plastered it around sort of internally within the State Fair broadcast booth. And I was out on stage doing an interview as I did every day. And there was maybe two people that were working there that knew about this woman. And we both spotted her in the crowd. And my friend Bob Collins went walking towards her, and she had a knife in her purse, and she just disappeared into the crowd. And if you've been to the state fair, that is not hard to do. It's just start walking amongst the strollers and people eating out of pails.
When I've done public appearances from my older previous job, because we did have a state fair booth, we also somehow attracted some very mentally unwell folks who are like, I saw this YouTube video, can you confirm this? And I remember, I'll never forget having to do it on my job. I don't know if NPR or anybody else did this at the old job, was like de-escalation seminars and things like that, of like how to de-escalate issues. And it's like, at this, like, it felt like kind of like a corporate, like, oh, here, we put a Band-Aid over it, so therefore you're trained on how to de-escalate very mentally unstable folks. And it's like, I'm not. I just got a corporate little Band-Aid.
Right.
I don't know if like NPR like did something like that.
I don't think. Yeah. Well, I can certainly speak for when I was there. There was not really like a plan that was in place. I mean, I think the overall feeling, of course, is that they wanted their employees to feel safe. But what measures they took, or like I said, if they had like a plan of action, I never knew about it.
Do you think they, with light of this issue and your book coming out and of the harassment treatment, do you think there was like any policy changes?
I would love to think
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
I would really love to think so. Because again, it's like if I had to be the guinea pig and you had to sort of practice with me as a very visible employee that had this happen, I would love to think that maybe they've put some sort of plan in place for if, God forbid, it should happen again. Yeah.
That's really scary. Did you ever think about like quitting radio,
yes.
trying to do a remote job
yes.
all the time?
Yep. I, at one point, I thought, I mean, I was so broken at some points, I thought, I just got to move. Like, mm-hmm. I felt that I couldn't even stay in the city. So I actually did do a sort of, you know, a look around, and I thought, I'll just pull out of the sky Memphis, Boston, Seattle, and Austin, Texas. And I just started sort of putting feelers out to see if anybody I knew there had a line on a job. But what I ultimately realized I was doing is I was truly trying to run from this problem that I thought, well, this is the only solution. I've got to take myself out of this place. I've got to. And that is really a sad thing, because this wasn't a job. This is my career. This is all I have done professionally. I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. And I felt, you know, there's a part of you that just goes, I can't believe a stranger has made this so difficult that I'm considering not only giving up my career, but moving as well.
That's devastating. What I also wanted to ask is, are you like, I don't want to say happy or content, but like, are you like happy with still being in radio? Do you always have like reservations still?
I mean, there is, you know, like we had touched on earlier just about, I think that there's one area in which I think media could definitely take a closer look is asking employees to have a strong social media presence to benefit the company they work for. Mm-hmm. I understand that's a marketing tool. You're almost a brand to them. And while I get it to some degree, I think that needs to be further examined, because that is exactly what opens up people's idea of, oh, I know everything about her because I saw this video last week, or I saw this. And so that's something I would love to see looked at. As far as just my trepidation about being on air, not really. It's kind of a, I hate to be so ghoulish, but with my experience and with the ultimate non-punishment that this person received, you know, I kind of felt like nothing was working. There was no one that was helping me. I just had to be my own advocate. And I would still say that to anyone. You have to be your own advocate. And if something feels wrong, it is. And listen to that voice, because that voice is not wrong.
What I was kind of struck by in the book as well was like your older brother helping you out.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate more on that?
Well, it was such a small, confined group of people that actually knew what was going on. And I took a leave of absence from my job for just 5 months. And in theory, I thought I was actually going to go to court and have this whole thing settled and behind me, ha ha. So that never, ever even came close. Mm-hmm. But within that, you know, I lived alone. I, you know, had my dogs and all that, but I was just falling apart. And the circle of friends that I had around me did some pretty heavy lifting, like emotionally. They were amazing. And sometimes they were even more powerful to me than my blood relatives. And that's kind of as you get older and you start having a friend group that's kind of like chosen family in a way. I know that's not anything surprising. A lot of people do that. But my brother was definitely, you know, had sort of that Sonny Corleone, you know, godfather, like, don't mess with my sister, you know. And I kind of needed that at that time. Like, I needed somebody to be angry for me, because I wasn't there yet. I was still just petrified and frozen and paralyzed. And it took me a long time to actually build up a healthy sense of anger. And that helped.
That's actually a really good point, because like what I would always when I was being harassed at by this other man from my other job, like I would just cry to my sister constantly. She doesn't live with me; she lives in a different state. Mm-hmm. But it was just like emotional validation that was just like really, really needed, because I don't have a spouse, I don't have a significant other, and that was the big issue where it's like I don't have. Pugs are not good guard dogs. I know that.
Right, right.
I loved my former pug, Zelda. She's great. I love her. Not a good guard dog.
No, and
not intimidating.
It is interesting too, because I certainly had varying police officers that responded to my 911 calls, and a lot of what they said was really insensitive. Like, you know, well, do you have a husband? As if, you know, I just remember thinking, really, we're going to have that conversation right now? But there was a lot of implied, like, well, you're alone. And, you know, it just, all it does is just sort of put some shame on the victim, which is, again, nothing new. And in stalking cases, if, you know, like I said, if you're not showing or revealing the damage physically, outwardly, people don't understand it. And then your feelings of, I don't want to talk to anybody about this. It's humiliating one. It's embarrassing. You know, I didn't really have, I had a few good friends that I certainly confided in. But other than that, I felt completely alone.
I am so sorry to hear about that. But it's like, I'm also very grateful that the book is now published out into the world.
Do you think
it's going to make like a bigger conversation about stalking and media relationships?
I would love it to. Yeah. Because really, I mean, ultimately, it is just my story. But even since, like I said, the last week or two, I've been hearing from a lot of other people who, of course, have had, like you, I mean, they've had these experiences. You don't have to be in media to have that kind of unwanted attention. So more, I guess, more awareness of what this crime actually does to a person. If I can help in any way, I'm super happy to do that.
My last question here is that you're now over at Radio K, right?
Yes. So Radio K, I was writing for a magazine called Dispatch, and I got an email from the woman in charge, Sarah Miller. And she had reached out to me and just said, hey, would you be interested? There's only 3 actual full-time positions at Radio K. Otherwise, it's, as you know, student volunteers. So, yeah, I said, oh, yeah. So I came in and, you know, it's to me, it's like college radio. There's a romance to it. I mean, there's a freedom to it. And if there's anything that I can impart to any of those student DJs is that at bare minimum, this job should be fun. And this is the perfect time for you to have fun, explore this freedom you have with music discovery, because I hate to say it, but out in the real world, this doesn't really exist anymore. Personality-driven radio is kind of becoming a thing of the past. And I just want to bring the energy to these students that love music as much as I do, that it's like, you know, put your personality there, because people listen for passion and, you know, enthusiasm in your voice for playing bands. And it's just, so it's a really fun position to be in.
Is it like, you think, part of the healing journey as well, just to kind of have a little bit more creativity?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
And you know what? I'll also say that I learned how not to be a manager from every manager I've ever had in my entire life. So I am literally the anti-manager manager. I'm like, I'm on your side. Like, I've got your back. You are the talent. And that is who I'm looking out for. Frankly, I'm sure they don't want to hear that. But yeah, I am truly all about empowering the employee. I will never be a manager. Never. You could be in my title, but I'll never be one.
It's always like, it's the fun thing. It's like the managers that don't want to be managers are sometimes the better ones.
Always.
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 All right. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Emma.
My next question, and you're going to be at the Granada Theater next week, correct?
Yes. It's going to be a pretty fun show with Liz Winstead hosting. And it's going to be a sort of the official Minneapolis book launch at the Granada Theater Tuesday, December 9th. And then the following night at the Landmark Center, we're doing a similar thing with my friend Andrea Swenson, who's also she's a fantastic author, and she's going to be hosting that the following night.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining in here on us. If you want to hear more about her book, The Granada Theater, tickets can be found at thegranadaminneapolis.com. Thank you again, Mary, for joining in on the being on the show tonight.
Thank you.
Dot dot.